It's madness time. It's March Madness, guys. March Madness is here. This is the week, spring break week for our school system. Tyler just came off of his college spring break, and we are here with all kinds of information. We're going to get you caught up on NFL free agency, the men's tournaments and women's tournaments, as well as Noah's going to get into some draft preview. You guys ready to do this?
Heck yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Sure.
As we speak right now, we are we've got the YouTube multi-view going on, and that might be our greatest gift, is this YouTube multi-view. We've got four games on the screen right now. It's kind of like being at your favorite sports bar, and we're looking at Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Robbie Avila at Indiana State, and they are currently trailing Drake with 16 seconds to go, so we're going to get a result on that. Another one we're tracking is the ASUN Tournament Championship, Stetson and Austin P. So guys, but first we want to start talking about NFL free agency. That's been a big talk in our group chat as a group here. And so the Bucks are making some moves. It's about to kick off tomorrow with real free agency. Trey, you wanted to give us some stats though. You're our stat guy. So Trey, give us a stat about free agency.
So it's the top five most cap space this offseason and the top five least cap space this offseason.
So what you got? Which you gonna start with, the least or the most?
I'm gonna start with the most because it's kind of first. So number one with the most cap space is the Washington Commanders.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're notorious for not having any. So I guess since they moved on from Daniel Snyder, they've got some space.
Yeah. It's a very big number of I don't actually know what that number is. Is that 100 million? 49, and then 40,000.
Yeah,
yeah, okay. So how about around 150 million? I'm sorry, guys. I'm not good with numbers. I can't read that. It's small. And then number two is the Titans, who is another notorious team for not having a lot of cap space.
Well, getting rid of Derrick Henry is going to be a piece in that. And same with Tannehill coming off their cap will be adding to it.
Apparently, Tannehill's going to the Steelers. That was a theory that was going around. Number three, though, is the Patriots.
I just got rid of Mac Jones this morning.
Yeah, that was a big move, too. I mean, not completely surprising, but a little shocking that they would just totally get rid of him and get something for him.
I mean, like, yeah, I can't believe they're getting something for him.
Yeah.
It's not totally, again, it's not totally shocking, but it's like to the Jaguars. And then moving on, number four is the Bears.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's a weird.
Yikes.
That's a little dangerous. I mean, the Bears, they made a lot of moves. It'll be interesting to see what they do with the first pick. But last year, they made a lot of moves to improve their offense and the parts around Fields. So that's interesting.
They've got a really good future there in Chicago. And whichever one they trade, Fields or the pick, it's going to make more and more cap space and more players that they're going to add on.
So I realized that
Let's not get ahead of ourselves and say that they have a bright future in Chicago.
I mean,
let's not get ahead of ourselves. They haven't had a bright future in Chicago ever.
Them right now.
Yeah.
Ever. They've never had a bright future in Chicago. Let's be clear. No 4,000-yard passers. All right. In their entire history, none. Zero. Jay Cutler is their all-time leading passer. Jay Cutler.
So I'm starting.
Definition of mediocrity.
So I'm starting to realize that I was not reading the cap space when I was reading off the Commanders numbers. It was in fact 96 million. That's still a lot.
Oh yeah.
And then number five, the last one that I was talking about the most is the Texans. That seems a bright future. That is dangerous.
Wow, that team's gonna be dangerous. Yeah.
$60 million dollars in cap space. Yeah, it's insane.
To put more parts around CJ Stroud.
Yeah.
So those
including apparently Saquon, who is going to them. I don't believe that.
Yeah, I've seen the Saquon to the Texans rumors. That team might come out of the AFC.
I'm so glad that's Mike didn't go there. If Mike went there, that would be
dangerous.
All right, so who you got on the other end of the spectrum? The teams with the least cap space.
So at number 28, the last five, number 20 is the Niners.
Okay.
With negative $7 million in cap space.
So they got to lose a few players before we start this out, huh?
Oh, yeah. There's one team that has to lose a lot of players. I don't mean to be that guy, but yeah, the last team does. And then number 29 is the Bills with a negative $12 million in cap space.
Yeah.
And they did just make a bunch of cuts just to get down to that number.
Oh, yeah. I heard they got rid of like Tre'Davious White.
Mitch Morse.
what was it, Poyer, I think?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Poyer also left.
Yeah, Josh Poyer. They got Jordan rid of that.
Poyer.
Jordan Poyer, thank you. They got rid of that whole defensive back core. And then number 30 is our rivals, the Saints.
Oh, with yes.
Negative $14 million.
Wow.
I'm surprised that's only negative 14.
Yeah, with signing Derek Carr to that much for Derek Carr.
They chronically have no cap space.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then number 31 is the Dolphins.
Mm-hmm. It makes sense that some of the more successful teams are the ones that are up against the cap. The Saints are a shocker, but yeah. So far these other teams, they made a run last year, and it'll be harder to make a run this year.
So following your logic, Dad, with good teams having not a lot of cap space, number 32 is the Chargers.
Ooh, gosh.
With negative $20 million in cap space. Negative 20.
Oh, my gosh. Sorry, Keenan Allen. You're about to leave.
Keenan Allen and Khalil Mack make a combined like $60 million or something like that.
Is Eckler
so much dead space?
Is Eckler a free agent?
I think he is.
Eckler is a free agent. Yeah.
I don't think he's going to go back.
Nope, he can't. There's no way.
More money.
I don't think he's going to get paid either. I think that might be it for Eckler, unfortunately.
What's crazy to me is that he was undrafted and he was this good until this last year.
True.
For your reference here, our Buccaneers are number 19th in cap space with $19 million. So
yeah, we were near the top before re-signing Evans.
Yeah.
So that dropped us down, and so that's a great transition. Let's talk about that. That was the big news in the Tampa Bay area since our last podcast. Mike Evans is back with the Bucs. And so, guys, what are your thoughts on the Bucs bringing back Evans? And he was really the number one priority for the Bucs.
Oh, I'm so happy. God, like, I was going to be really scared if we didn't have Mike, especially if he didn't retire here. Because something that I didn't like with the Rays was when Longoria left, because he was my favorite player at that time. And it kind of hurt. Like, this guy has spent his whole career here building his whole entire, I don't even know what you call it, his, like, motto. He built his personality there. And
his whole reputation, his Buccaneers.
His mojo.
And he's going to get to end it here, and that's a really good thing to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked about our priorities for the Bucs in free agency. And as we went around, as I recall, the consensus, my pick was Antoine Winfield, and I think most of you were either Winfield or Baker being the number one priority. Mike ends up being the number one priority and signing first amongst the group. So – where do you guys think you stand? Where do we stand with the priorities for the Bucs at this point now?
They need to get them straight.
We've obviously gotten Antoine Winfield signed at this point as well to his franchise tag. It should be right now. It should be Baker because Lavonte David is getting up there in age. And I'm wearing his jersey, but I don't really believe in Kyle Trask as a quarterback of the future.
Yeah, I think you're just wearing that jersey because it's creamsicle and it's cool.
And also because he might be the Bucs' next quarterback, which I don't like to say, but it's true because right now Baker wants what it's believed to be is $45 million, and the Bucs are offering him $25 million. And that's not that's a really big space to make up.
Yeah, I think we also need to look at the quarterbacks that are already free agents. Russell Wilson's going to get paid by the Broncos next year on a pretty high number, so maybe he's willing to come in pretty cheap for the Bucs. I don't know if Baker is going to be back here, and honestly, I'm okay with that.
I'm going to disagree with you, Tyler, that Russell is going to come in cheap because he just had a big deal, and I think he's expecting something bigger.
Well, he's getting $52 million next year because of this big deal.
Yeah, he's getting paid that money already. So
yeah,
he's still getting
paid
the same money. And so he doesn't, he could sign for the league minimum. He'll still be making a lot of money during the year.
He'll still be making $53 million at that point.
Russ could come cheap. Of course, drafting a quarterback could come cheap.
But Mike Evans didn't want that.
Well, and that's the thing that gets me is that it seemed like in all the chatter leading up, some of the most reliable information that we were getting would be that that Mike and Baker were going to be a package deal. And so Mike coming in first, and now Baker might not come through for Mike, or, you know, what if it had been the reverse? What if Baker would have signed and then Mike didn't come? And then so really interesting drama surrounding the whole Buccaneers situation with the free agency. And then, you know, Noah started to mention some of the lower priority free agents that are out there for the Bucks. You got the two linebackers, Lavonte David and Devin White, both free agents. I think we all agree that Devin White is probably not going to be back in a Buccaneer uniform. Lavonte David, like Mike Evans, is a guy who's really long in the tooth, has been great production and hasn't really been paid, hasn't really had a huge payday as a Buck. Do the Bucks reward him now, or do they decide to move on from an aging linebacker?
Yeah. It's a kind of interesting talk because Devin White isn't a guy of interest right now to the Bucks, especially because of how good KJ Britt came out in the end of the season. And then we get to the amazing Lavonte David, who's hopefully a future Hall of Famer. What we're looking at right now is that there's some guys in the draft that are looking good. And there's also a couple of guys that are going to be in free agency that are pretty good. And it's money over time. And really, I don't think he's got a lot of time left in the tank. And he said it's either being a Buck or retiring. And it's really his choice at this point.
And the other thing with Lavonte is last year we let him hit the open market along with Carlton Davis. And we saw that he wasn't really garnering a whole lot of attention, and so he came back at a cheaper number for the Bucks.
Mm.
So lots to consider. Lots is going to happen in the next 24 hours. We're releasing this podcast on Sunday night. Monday morning opens the gates for free agency, so it's going to be fast and furious. Another thing to look for is that people are starting to believe that the Baker Mayfield is going to wait for Kirk Cousins first to sign to set the market for free agent quarterbacks. Cousins looks like pretty strong move going to Atlanta. So that could be the first domino. And then after that, we could see Baker signing with us, but it's going to be open market and Baker can sign with someone else.
The other thing that was interesting is I was expecting Mike to wait a lot longer because Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson are both expected to hit the free agent market this year. And they're both expected to fully reset the wide receiver market, garnering potentially $20 million each. And so I just thought it was very interesting that Mike pulled the trigger now when he is obviously going to be more valuable after Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson reset that market.
So just now, Stetson, 94-91 wins the ASUN tournament, is heading to March Madness.
Crazy.
Yep.
Congratulations to St. Pete High graduate Tristan Gross.
tournament as a freshman.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Yep. So, yeah, as we were talking, Stetson went final with their victory. Of course, you know, we're giving you live updates on a podcast that you might be listening to a couple days from now. But also, as we were watching, Robbie Avila, who we were watching for Indiana State, they fell to Drake. In reading, though, both of those teams have pretty strong strength of schedule. So it looks like Drake and Indiana State would get in anyway. It would be a shame to not have Kareem Abdul-Jabbar or Robbie Avila make it into the tournament because he's going to be a figure that we're really going to be watching a lot of people will be watching for in those first few rounds.
It was a crazy game, too, because Indiana State came from a deficit of 69 to 47.
And it came at his hand, especially the way he's playing right now. He's looking like young Larry Bird going to the same college. So.
Or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
He looks more like Jokic the way he plays, actually. But yeah. I thought that was a really funny nickname on Twitter.
Like a loaf of bread or something.
Pretty much. Always in the right place, though. So speaking of that situation with Drake and Indiana State, both being able to make it out of a small conference, not one of the Power Fives, USF's
Mountain Valley.
A little bit harder. What's that?
Mountain Valley.
Mountain Valley Conference in the house. USF, one of our local favorites, has made a huge run in the AAC. They are the number one seed. They've been on a winning streak. They've had a great conference record and won the regular season tournament. But the danger is that their strength of schedule is not strong, and they may not make the tournament if they lose the AAC tournament. So interesting situation where such a great run for USF in the regular season, but if they don't hold up their end of the bargain in the tournament, it could be challenging for them.
Especially because there's some sneaky good teams in that conference. You've got FAU, obviously, who is ranked as high as 4, I believe. And you also have SMU, who has one of the best defenses in the country. Luckily, Houston is not in the American anymore for basketball. That's all I'll say about that.
I've watched 2 games of FAU. They're really good. But also, both of them, they lost. Against FGCU.
They lost to FGCU.
and USF. Mm-hmm. I've watched two of their games and they've lost both of them. So I better watch games that they lose it.
FAU is just a really streaky team. I mean, they beat Arizona earlier this year, but they also have some really bad losses.
So it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. We'll probably do a reaction podcast Sunday night next week after the tournament brackets are released, because we'll have a lot of thoughts then for sure. Everything's kind of moving parts right now. But one of the parts that has already been settled is the FGCU men's season, Tyler.
Unfortunately, they fell in the first round of the University of Queens. Isaiah Thompson dropped 32, which is a career high for him. And they still managed to lose. Again, Zach Anderson not showing up in the big moments when the lights are brightest. But he is also only a junior. He'll be back next year, hopefully, if he doesn't decide to transfer to a Power 5 school. But other than the FAU game, honestly, this season has been real disappointing. I finished with an overwhelming losing record of like 11-20. And so just a really disappointing second season from Pat Chambers as the head coach. I'll be curious to see if he's back. They managed this season to win games simply because they had a lot of fifth-year seniors, a lot of COVID seniors that came back for another year in college basketball. That was the only reason they won. So they didn't have a great recruiting class last year. This year's class isn't looking great so far. So this might be Pat Chambers' last season, honestly, at FGCU.
Yeah, that team didn't look too hot.
No, and they... some questionable coaching decisions going down the stretch of a lot of games near the end of the year. They did go on a run before the conference tournament, but it did not carry over into beating Queens, even though they beat Queens in that three-game run. So it's just interesting that they didn't make the adjustments necessary after seeing Queens for the first time, but Queens managed to make the adjustments to beat FGCU the second time around.
The ASUN tournament won by Stetson. Stetson, a small private university here in the state of Florida. So Florida representing, already having the state of Florida having a seat at the table in the tournament through Stetson, the Hatters. But interesting, you know, Trey and I went down to FGCU and watched a game against Stetson where FGCU dominated and blew them out. So very, very interesting to see how teams go up and down in the tournament during the college season.
Absolutely. And then in other news, FGCU women's, they take their first victory of the conference tournament last night against Jacksonville. They at one point led by 22 and they only end up winning by about 7. So they definitely let up some steam there at the end of that game. Jacksonville had a player go for 33, which was quite a bit given that they only scored 70 points. 33. I believe it was 39. She shot the lights out, but it just wasn't enough. She accounted for almost half of her team's points, but just wasn't there. And ultimately, FGC was a little disappointing in that game. I expected more. A lot of missed layups, a lot of missed three-pointers. They started the game 8 of 13 from 3 and finished like 9 or 10 of 20. And so just a game that, you know, got lucky to win that one. And so just expecting a little bit more on Tuesday.
So that player for Jacksonville is Eden Battle. She went for 33 points, and she was a stud. I mean, she is outstanding. She's going to be one to watch moving forward. The way they were talking on the broadcast, she will be back. Of course, Tyler was playing in the band, so you didn't get to hear the broadcast. But one of the silver linings that the broadcasters pointed out is that this FGCU team had not really faced any adversity at all during the season. They went 16-0 in conference. And so hopefully this is – a chance for them to face some adversity before the tournament and succeed and know what it's going to be like to have your back against the wall, because it will happen again in the women's tournament.
Yeah. This is a team that hasn't lost since they played Iowa back in November. And it's also important to note that it was a very physical game, which is not something FGCU is used to. Jacksonville had three different players foul out within a span of about 60 seconds of game time. And so just a game where, you know, you feel good. You don't feel great winning it, but it's good to move on to the next one.
Yep. And Juice Zudu really put the team on her back in that fourth quarter.
Absolutely.
And kept them ahead, kept them in the lead to finish out the win. So we'll see. When do the women play again, Tyler?
They play again on Tuesday. Another note about the ASUN women's tournament is that Stetson, the two seed, lost last night. So their top opponent in the conference is already gone. And it was really the only team in the regular season that gave them any trouble. I believe we only beat Stetson by about 9. So,
and the oh, go ahead, Trey.
I would also like to point out that the FGCU women's is 16-0 in their conference,
undefeated in the ASUN conference. Yeah. Yes.
Yep, and it is tied for the NCAA lead with the most 25-plus win seasons in a row, tied with only with UConn. Which is just another incredible feat by Carl Smesko. Not expecting him to leave, although the athletic director did leave earlier this year, and he had a great relationship with him.
Also, their last 16 games have been in the conference. So, yeah, it's been a good winning streak, definitely.
Tyler mentioned their last loss was to Iowa. Iowa, home of Caitlin Clark, the probably the most famous current women's basketball player in the world. And Caitlin and Iowa today prevailed over Nebraska. Noah and Trana, I got to check it out today, and she really put them on her back at the end. Made the shot to tie the game and then won the game in overtime.
I'm going to fact check you on that. Look, their last loss was to Duke.
Oh,
I didn't even know that. Checker. Yeah. It might have been in that same week. It was Thanksgiving break. Yeah, I wasn't there for that.
Yeah, it was December 10th.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Fact Checker, for keeping us in mind. Appreciate it.
No problem.
All right. So another thing that will be coming up that we'd like to pay a lot of attention to, and Noah is particularly already ahead of the curve, is the NFL draft. It'll be coming up in May. And so Noah has been starting to do some research. And what we're going to do over the next few weeks is he's going to take a chance to preview a position group for the draft each week, each podcast we do. So Noah, who are you starting off with?
Today we're going to start off, I'm calling this segment the underrated from the Dynamite Sports podcast. Our first player up will be Brian Thomas Jr.
You didn't tell us the position.
Oh, this is wide receiver.
Okay, so give us the name again.
Brian Thomas Jr. Brian Thomas Jr. ran a 4.33 40. He has a vertical of 38.5. His broad jump was 10 feet and 6 inches. And he had 11 rips on the bench. He is an insane receiver. I'd compare him most likely to the one and only Justin Jefferson. And also compare him. His speed is like Mike Evans, especially because he comes in at 6'4". He's very fast and he's very dominant when he plays.
Okay, you got to help me out because I am not a draft pick. Where did this guy play college basketball?
He played college football.
I mean, college football.
And we are talking about way too many things, guys. We need to work on like centralizing our topics. Go on.
And he came from Louisiana State University.
Otherwise known as LSU. Yeah, yes. Okay. Thank you.
And he played with Malik Nabers. He actually led all of FBS in touchdowns this season. Second up, we've got Brennan Rice. Brennan Rice, you might recognize that last name. It's Jerry Rice's son. 36.5 vertical, 9 feet, 11 inches broad jump, and 13 reps on the bench. He has a very similar game to his dad. He runs sharp routes, and he has very good hands.
Not very physically impressive.
No, not at all. And the thing that his dad said that he did was catch bricks to learn how to catch.
Jerry Rice's dad was a bricklayer, and so Jerry as a kid caught bricks as he helped his dad. Go ahead.
So instead of laying bricks, he would just throw bricks with his son. And that really trains your hands, and it'll create calluses that will help you catch the ball. Similar to Larry Fitzgerald is the more recent version of that. Where when he catches it in pregames, if you watch clips of Larry Fitzgerald, you will hear the smack every time. And it sounds like he's hitting someone or like hitting the boxing things, boxing gloves together. There we go.
The boxing things.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah. Next up from Florida, we've got Ricky Pearsall.
Hold on. There's a player from Florida that's worth drafting.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
That's, go on.
Isn't that wild?
First time. Ooh, voice crack. Hello. I'm a teenager.
First time since Kyle Pitts.
Yeah. So this guy is similar to Kadarius Toney in the way that he can run, but he can catch the ball.
Okay.
That's all you want to hear. Yeah, it's not what you want to go in draft catch the process.
He had the best catch of the season, according to most. That clip will be playing right now. And he has a 42-inch vertical. He has a broad jump of 10 feet and 9 inches. He benched actually 17 reps. This Good guy Lord. Is absolutely insane.
Kadarius Toney, if he could catch, would be insane.
Yeah, this dude is really good.
17 reps on the bench for a wide receiver?
Mm-hmm.
42-inch vertical is insane.
That's so crazy.
That's insane, too.
Dude can
How tall is he?
I don't know that. I think he's – Ricky Pearsall is not very tall. He's a medium-sized receiver, like kind of like Jamar Chase.
Gotcha.
Like a 6'2",
6'3". Pearsall is – oh, my God. Anyway, next up is Keon Coleman. Keon Coleman runs a 4.6, 140. Yeah, it's not a great one.
Concrete shoes.
Yeah, but he does have a vertical of 38, and he has the broad jump of 10 feet and 7 inches.
Ricky Pearsall is 6'1".
There you go. I almost nailed it. I think I said 6 foot.
I said 6'2". So we were like,
split the difference.
Yeah. Keon Coleman plays a very good game, kind of similar to Ricky Pearsall. He's not as good at changing directions, but this guy can move. Mel Kiper compared Keon Coleman to Puka Nacua in the way he runs his routes and the way that he's able to move down the field.
It's also important to note that Keon Coleman is 6'4". So that
I was trying to
refresh. That straight line speed isn't super important.
Yeah.
Yeah. Keon Coleman is a really good wide receiver coming out of Florida State. He'll be a good option for whoever chooses him. And again, he'll act a lot like Puka Nacua in the way that he catches and runs his routes. Next up, we've got Luke McCaffrey. Luke McCaffrey out of Rice ran a
White Lightning
4.6. He ran, his brother ran a 4.45. And his vertical is a 36-inch vertical. He had a broad jump of 10 feet and 1 inch. He can move. He had in his years before in Stanford, he had a pretty big run. I believe it was 45 yards. And if you look at it, he's running fast. Because, dude.
It is also important to note with Luke McCaffrey that he moved from quarterback to wide receiver at Rice after transferring. So he does provide a little bit of extra athleticism, even if you wanted him to play quarterback.
Yeah. And he also, again, has that ability to play running back because he can run. And he has that really good ability to catch the ball again. He might have that overhype near the draft, but he is also a good option at receiver.
So interesting to me that, like, here he is, like, the best NFL player's little brother was at Rice, and like nobody talked about him in college, and now all of a sudden he's like front and center in the NFL draft. Is it because his name is McCaffrey?
It's because his name's McCaffrey, yeah.
So, and interestingly, Christian is not very tall.
Nope.
Don't worry about finding his height. We all know he's not very tall. We've all seen it. His dad, Ed McCaffrey, was 6'5", though.
Yeah.
6'5", wide receiver. So Luke is 6'2", so kind of splits the difference between dad, Ed, and little brother. But I find that fascinating that he like he was completely like ignored, and now he's the top
one. That entire family is completely fascinating. The mom was like an Olympic athlete running track. Dad played wide receiver in the NFL.
His sister played in college basketball or something.
Yeah, one brother was a quarterback at University of Michigan. One brother was a Heisman Trophy candidate at Stanford, and the other one played wide receiver at Rice. Yeah. Just fascinating.
It is.
Mm-hmm. It is a bloodline.
All right, and Noah, number one.
That was it.
Oh, that was number one.
Yeah,
God, no, I'm doing a bad job.
That was number five.
Oh, that was number five. Yeah. Oh, that's why I was confused. Yeah, you went 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 instead of 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. All right.
This draft class in general just feels super loaded.
Yeah.
Between offensive line, wide receivers, quarterbacks, all of it.
It doesn't look like there's many bad picks that you could go with. It doesn't look like that. There's probably going to be a few busts here and there because there's so many good ones. But yeah, it doesn't look like there's a bad decision.
So lots to analyze. No, you're going to put that graphic up on Insta later. Okay. Yeah. And so you'll be able to follow that along each week. Noah will give you some draft knowledge, and we'll pipe in with what we know and Google what we don't know, which is what we do. All right, guys. Anything else for our podcast listeners this week?
I don't got nothing.
Me neither.
All right. Well, we will be back talking college basketball on Sunday night after the tournament brackets are released. We'll give some more NFL free agency updates as well. From way downtown, we say,
bang!